this may be our last chance to provide the means of saving civilization from annihilation.
There's much we can learn from each other.
One of those moments in history.
We are all together out on the internet.
Can there be a peace between us?
You were an eyewitness.
The people who grew up with the technology.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
A worldwide broadcasting system.
This is for you, for my boy.
Please keep in touch.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program, Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? And you know what's amazing, Dave? Since you met me, the guests you've gotten to speak with, not just all the different stuff traveling, but just in the radio in general. Every week we bring it, don't we, on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment.
You sure do, Neil. I don't know where you find these superstars from, but you've got another superstar here.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I was into the Twilight series. I'm telling you, I'm a huge fan of it. And
are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, that makes me kind of sound weird at 47, right? But my wife and I have watched it. And
yeah, I didn't know you liked werewolves.
Yeah. Oh, it goes back to Lost Boys. I'm a huge fan of Lost Boys. Dave, did you ever watch that, or were you in the military or missing the Lost Boys?
No, no.
I've been a vampire slash that kind of fan.
I've been sheltered
since Lost Boys, which again, I need to watch again. But go ahead, Dave, and introduce our guest.
Kyla Gordon, well known for the Twilight Saga. I know, a very big fan of my daughter, girls in general, but some guys too.
Oh, thanks,
known
Dave.
For their ripped bodies and rarely wearing shirts on the set, and werewolves, and man, this thing was amazing. It just took the world by storm, and we're just honored to have you on the show. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a crazy.
Anything I said not true?
No, not at all. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
but,
mean,
did, but
Twilight doesn't discriminate against any age, so it's okay that you're in your 40s and you're.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you said that, because I mean, that makes me sound, again, I watch and stream so many different shows all the time, but again, I was into that and I enjoy it. And it really is a series that started as a book, Dave, as you remember. So again, anything that's a book that's created, mm-hmm. a movie or TV series, it's a guaranteed win. People don't understand that. And that these talented writers that have written books that have become successful, once they make them into movies or TV shows, they're set. And it really, that's what usually happens. Kiowa, would you agree with me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Stephanie Meyer is definitely living life very nicely.
Well, we're all older than we used to be. I don't think you're in your 20s anymore. Just how old are you?
Yeah, I turned 30 actually next month.
30? Oh, you're an old
26.
Guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How's that ripped body? Is it still ripped? Or is gravity taking its hold on you?
I mean, gravity's out, but I mean, you just got to get in the gym to try to combat that.
That's
all
right.
About eating right.
So you look as good as you did as ever, right?
I'm best shape of my life.
There you go.
Hey,
that's
you got to be Hollywood. That's
that we
the,
should all
that,
be saying.
Yeah, but Dave, that's not the truth for everybody. But Hollywood, you have to do that, Kiowa, right? You have to always be watching.
Yeah, you got to stay in that. Mm-hmm. If you want to stay in the game, it's the nature of the beast.
All right, let's start at the very beginning. So when did acting start for you? Did you always have a love for it? Were you one of those child actors that just turned into an adult actor? Tell me all about it.
Shoot, man. I've always loved acting ever since I first saw, like, my first TV show, you know. Growing up. But my mom, first time I remember, I don't know. I remember watching, like, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, like, the old ones when I was, like, like it was a TV show when I was probably 4 or 3.
Wow.
Shoot. Yeah, it was back.
They let
in
you
Virginia.
Watch that stuff, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I have like 7 or 6 older siblings, so they all watched whatever they wanted. I would just sit there and watch it with them. Yeah, but really, my mom got me into it. She turned me on to it. She was an aspiring actress in the early 90s and all that, and she's done like extra work and things here and there. But it wasn't until I went to church with her when I was 18, and Stephanie Meyer, the writer of Twilight, was my Sunday school teacher, and she told me about like a casting call for her. Heard the next movie, Twilight New Moon, and I was like, what? Oh, yeah, what's up? She's like, yeah, you could play a werewolf. You should go. Okay, whatever, dude. Like, I was such, like, a slacker in high school. It was just funny.
Wow.
It just kind of came out of nowhere. It was like, what? Is this, like, destiny right now? It was crazy. So I just went and went to this open casting call, huff, puff, blew the house down, and, like, got a call, like, a month later. My mom comes in my room, and she's like, hey, you got that part in Twilight, you know, they want you to play Embry Coleman. Who the heck's that? I didn't even audition for that character.
So, did you audition without your shirt?
No, they didn't make me take my shirt off. We were an objective film.
Wow,
film.
I hired you sight unseen.
Yeah, they just assumed that I would look fine under the shirt. I mean, I was a skinny little kid, so it's like they put us in this little camp. Wolf camp, so we can get a little more
wolf camp
packed on us. So I gained like 10 pounds of muscle between getting the role. And
I
filming.
Guess so.
So that was crazy. Yeah.
So your story.
So that's how it all started. I was 19. On
wow, film. That's crazy. Your story to know that your Sunday school teacher, and do you stay in touch with her still, and all that with Stephanie?
I haven't talked to her in a couple of years, but I mean. We used to hang out a lot when we were in the same neck of the woods, but I live out in L.A. now, and she's still in Arizona. My mom's moved from the area where the church is, so it's like she doesn't go to that same church anymore. But last time I saw her, it was like at one of the premieres. So, yeah, we don't really keep in touch that much.
But what a connection. That just proves connections are huge. If you know somebody... That really can
yeah,
get
right?
Yeah.
You never know.
It's all about who you know and how they know you.
Right, exactly. So. Go, Dave. Next question. I think that
yeah,
move one question out.
I mean, if you know someone and they don't like you, it's not going to help. But
yeah, so did you know that this was going to be as big as it was when you first started? Did you know that it was
going to
take the world by storm?
Yeah, because it was right after Twilight. Like, I saw the previews for that. I'm like, what the hell?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I remember the book. It was
the saga.
You know, like, people are like, oh, you should read the Silver Gunwash. I'm like, oh,
sequel.
Pass, whatever. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, that came up, and I was like, oh, wow, the movie just
came out.
So, like, she invited me to, like, the premiere of the first one before I even got the role. So I was like, whoa, this could totally change my life. So,
yeah, you
got it. And it did change my life. 10 years later, I'm like, out here, still doing it, working. So
did you read the book?
Stars.
Did you read the books before you started playing your part? Did you go back and catch up and read the books?
Yeah, so right after I found out about the open casting call, I got like the audio books. So me and my mom and my sisters would just like drive around or sit at home and like listen to them on tape.
That probably got you really excited.
Yeah, I mean, the details of, like, the long muscles. I'm like, cool, dude, yeah, that's totally me. But, yeah, it was pretty cool to, like, be like, what? I'm going to be a freaking werewolf. This is crazy. Giant wolves are my forte, you know? I love wolves.
So you had fans coming out of your nose, out of your ears. I mean, they were all over the place. Tell us about some of the fans. I'm sure you had fan mail and some stories about how popular you were in their eyes. Like I said, my daughter, you know, she loved the fantasy love stories. She loved about werewolves. I mean, you know, it just all came together like a perfect storm, didn't it?
Yeah, it was really like surreal. Like how crazy it all happened. Like I came out to L.A., got a manager, and, like,
fan mail would just be sent to his address all the time, and he'd like send it to me. I'm like, what the heck? Like, people just asking for an autograph or like just saying how I've inspired them. I was like, wow, that's really humbling. And then I'd like go and do these Twilight conventions around the country where hundreds of fans would just show up just to like get a glimpse and hang out with other fans, you know. And
wow.
That was wild as well. Like just sitting there talking with them, listening to their stories, signing autographs, taking pictures, hours and hours of it. It was wild. And then they had like these vampire balls that they just throw. So you'd go and like have like a little dance party with these fans who dress up like they're at a prom. So that was quite an experience.
Wow.
And then like lining up, they'd line up for the premieres like nights before, and like I'd come out with my friends and we'd like take an acoustic guitar and just like play them some songs because they're like staying in tents. And so it was like, I think I could like, you know, maybe surprise them, and who knows, maybe they'll get a good story out of it. So
were there some real love stories going on with you and some of the cast and crew?
Oh man, no way.
Yeah, that's a raw Dave gossip.
Me and the boys would just hang.
God, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, me and the Wolfpack would just kind of stay secluded because our schedules were like
as wolves do.
Vampires. Yeah. So vampires are like whatever. They're doing their thing. We're doing our thing. We're walking around Vancouver. Once in a while, we would like run into each other and just like, oh, dude, what's up? You wanna go? No, not really, but yeah, we kind of terrorized Vancouver for a little bit, but nothing too fascinating.
Neil?
All right, so now see, Dave, this is great. I love it because Dave is coming out of the woodwork more and more asking questions that I love, because I love just to kind of just go back and forth and banter, kind of like when we did it with our guest that you know really well, Dave, but I could do it with anybody. I could talk a leg off of anybody. You know, I'm an extrovert big time. But no, so the thing that you talk about those Comic-Cons and those conventions, wow, they're just becoming so popular. Mm-hmm. They come out all the time, and it's a great way for you to make some extra money, not just off of just the appearance, but merch. Talk about, you know, autographs and pictures and how you really it can be a good deal, a good extra gig for you when you're in between jobs and stuff, for sure.
Yeah, definitely when you don't want to be doing like a restaurant job in between. You want to focus on your craft, right? You know,
yeah, your every actor has a second job,
a
right?
6-year-old daughter. Yeah, right. Yeah, I have a 6-year-old daughter. I got another job right there, like full-time daddy job. So it's hard to just be like, okay, I gotta do acting, and then I gotta do some other job on the side. When it's like, dude, I've already taken enough time to do this one movie, so now I gotta come home and spend as much time as I can with my daughter before I have to go on to the next job.
Oh, how old is your daughter?
She's 6.
Wow, great age.
She's in the first grade. It's never was.
So you're a family man now.
Yeah.
How's that feel?
I mean, by the time, it's been amazing. It's been an incredible experience for me. I mean, my parents
transition.
Had 8 kids. And by the time they were 30, they had 7. So it's like,
oh, wow.
I only have one. And I'm like, how did they do it?
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcasters' features, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
I have six, so I understand how challenging and crazy it is. But everyone picks up the slack. It might look like, you know, at home it's crazy, but when you guys go out, isn't it true? As a big family, you guys just seem like you're the most normal because you know you have to kind of, you don't want to separate yourself even more because everyone's staring at you already, so you don't act up even more, right? When you would go out.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
I mean, it really
those family gatherings can be huge too, 30
it
or 40.
It was chaotic.
Kids,
yeah.
Grandkids. And of course, you're not probably old enough to have grandkids, but but just wait. They multiply like rabbits. So tell me about Roswell. What's up with that?
Oh, man. Yeah. So they brought that show back. It was based off a book series, and it came out in the 90s, and then it left, and now it's back on CW. So the first season aired last year, and I got a chance to be in that and in the last two episodes, and now they brought my character back, which I don't know if I can even anyways, there's season two coming out March 16th. So yeah, this is like, wow, that's like 3 weeks away.
Tell me about the show. Tell me about Roswell.
So yeah, Roswell, big alien like landmark, right? And so it's a bunch of like alien fans, craziness, all that, all the just novelty of aliens in Roswell. So there's like nuts and conspiracy theorists, and then there's these kids who went to high school together, and this is depicting them 10 years after the fact. And on my side, you have my brother, who's one of the main characters, and we're all a military family, and our dad is like this huge D-bag who's just out to get aliens. And it's like, people don't even know that aliens exist, dude. Chill out. So his whole life, he's dedicated to just like thwarting this incoming alien threat that is just basically just what he believes, which there's no proof of, but so I've kind of bought into that, and I'm like his
kind of like X-Files.
It's definitely a lot of extra trauma.
Become like, one you caught the bug.
I mean, yeah, that'd be dope, but
it crazy
I've bought into that, and I'm all about exterminating the alien threat.
But think about the alien community.
So you're building your fan base. Now you got werewolf fan base. You got alien fan base. What's next?
I'm hitting all the genres, man. Zombies.
Zombies.
I got a movie called Blood Quantum coming out March 27th, actually.
You got all the bases covered.
I don't know if they're doing, like a live interview here to see what it's going to be like. But in Canada, they have a nationwide release.
Canada so far, and a bunch of different territories across the world. But
vindication. You're set for life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zombies, aliens, and werewolves, and vampires.
No. I was going to ask about. We're talking about Roswell for a second. I'm sure. Being a part of this show, you've looked back and see how many people really believe there are aliens among us, and the whole Area 51 and all of the different things out there. And there's a huge UFO community. I'm sure you've done more research from that since this part.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Want to storm Area 51 like everyone was threatening to do?
I mean, that whole like. It was like a troll thing going on. I love shaking up the world, you know. So I'm just a rebel without a cause sometimes.
So you played a part in that.
I mean, I did like post about it and stuff, but I was never going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go out there and see if I can get it out.
You were their leader.
I'm not that crazy. Yeah. I'm like their CEO.
So you didn't get a visit from the FBI or the CIA?
Well, he will now for what he's saying.
Don't laugh.
I wonder what's going to happen. He's going to get more in trouble with his current show, or is he going to get in trouble with the FBI and CIA and everything talking about, you know, Area 51? But like I said before, it's funny niche groups that are out there. But the alien UFO community, do you believe there are UFOs amongst us?
I do. Yeah. I do believe so. I do believe in they're extraterrestrials and all that, but I'm not a nut about it. I mean, I don't think we are the center of the universe. I don't think we're the only living human or like beings out there. So yeah, it's in my mind. I think that there's other things out there.
Yeah, or cyber humans. So we just don't know.
Yeah,
you know who was here before and who seeded and who greeted and mm-hmm. and we don't know.
Yeah,
we
and
just
who,
don't know
who's just disappeared off the face of
right,
the earth.
Exactly. And you know what? I think his next part needs to be in the Expanse. He needs to get in the next season of the Expanse. That show is awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
All right, I should watch that then.
Oh,
tell
you
your
love
agent.
It. You love it. You love it.
All yeah.
Right. All right, Dave, go ahead, next question.
All right, dude.
Well, did we talk about your latest projects? I think we might have. Did we miss any?
Yeah, he's got more.
A couple of them, yeah.
What else do you have? What else
yeah,
is going on?
I got more in the pipeline, man. Like, last year was one of my busiest years, actually. I did a mini-series for Netflix and A&E called The Liberator, which I think is coming out in the winter, next winter.
What's
that
about?
The end of the year. It's about World War II. It's about the company. U.S. soldiers, comprised mostly Native Americans and Mexican Americans, and just basically just like misfits of the country that were like basically they were being either going to be court-martialed or they were being disciplined. And so this dude, Lieutenant Felix Sparks, he goes out and gets all these guys together, creates this crude company to go out to fight in Europe to combat the Nazis. And so it's basically like Band of Brothers reborn, but it's so we shot it all on blue screen, so it's going to be looking like comic book esque and we're all live action, right? And they got us like painted up all like crazy looking like comic book characters, so like the rest of it's just gonna be like a graphic novel. So it's gonna be pretty interesting to see depict
more mainline, more normal for you.
yeah. So I get to play this Jeep driver for Felix Sparks, who later becomes a colonel.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's about his journey. It's like the 500 days of him and his company going through like Italy, and then
this
all
a movie
the way
or series?
Italy. It's a miniseries. It's gonna be on Netflix.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, so we
liberate
Dachau prison. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, the Pacific.
If it takes off.
You'll have to let me know when that comes out.
Well,
come back on the show to tell me just about that, because I will watch it and stream it, and then you can come back and talk about your character more.
Heck yeah,
that'd be
dude.
Awesome. I mean, I'm a binge-watching crazy. Right.
World War II.
Yeah, I'm into that. I'm definitely. All right, Dave, Dave's last question, yeah. The reason Dave's on is because he's funny. Dave is, and also the kind of questions he asks, he has no filter at times, especially trying to grab dirt from the Twilight to tell his daughter this is what the relationships are like on set. But Dave also is a caregiver, and that's one reason why he's on the show.
That's what my daughter and I have in common. Right?
And I know that Kaya was going to be in the book with his caregiving story, so go ahead and ask it, Dave.
Yeah, I'm going to make a book of everyone I interview, so you'll be in it too. So I'm a caregiver. 23 years ago, I'm an old guy, 66 years old, old what? Body, young mind. And 23 years ago, been married 45 years, 23 years ago, my wife has this headache that turned into a stroke that, you know, she lost her speech, became paralyzed. And normally, you know, that just takes people out, maybe destroys their marriage. But we reinvented ourselves because, you know, we have strong faith and we're positive, and now we travel the country. My wife still cannot talk and she still cannot walk, so she's in a power wheelchair. She goes faster than I do, and she speaks through charades and Pictionary, two games I hate, by the way. But, you know, we're trying to get through the new normal, and we talk to caregivers because 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do. I didn't even know what a caregiver was. Now I am one. And, you know, I've been on 31 TV shows in the morning, and I've spoken at Harvard, NASDAQ, Carnegie Hall, sharing the stage with Suzanne Summers, Martha Stewart, Ice-T, Caitlyn Jenner, of all people, and just helping caregivers to stay alive. So my question to you and to every celebrity that comes on the show is, you know, have you thought about caregiving? Because I believe everyone is either going to become one or need one. It's inevitable. Has it already affected your life with some of your family?
Yeah. So my mom had to give some so her mom passed away a couple of years back, and she had dementia, and she had to like basically take care of her in the last year, and also her late husband who passed away from cancer. And so I've seen that like secondhand, but I myself, the only care I give is to my daughter, which isn't the same, but it's interesting because I'm definitely not like opposed to it or anything, but I mean, I have so much left to do and so much left to give, and that if that opportunity arises, I would definitely
so you've seen your mother go through
if I had a loved one that I had to take care of for the rest of their life or even my life, I would be there for them.
Sure you would. You've seen your mother go through some stuff. What toll has it taken on her? You know, what scars are left from just being a caregiver? You've probably seen her burn out, you know, and is she recovered from all of that stuff, or is she still kind of working through it?
I mean, it's tough at times. I am not with her enough to say for sure, but she lives in Arizona, and whenever I see her, I think it's her family. She loves her kids. She has 8 of them, as you know, I told you, and she's gone through so much, but yet she still has such this, like, this young vigor in her, and she'll never give up.
How old is she?
She's 61 now.
That's young for my standards.
Yeah, but she's been through a lot. How many kids?
Having 8 kids.
8 kids, yeah.
Having such loss. Yeah. Like, she's for what she's been through.
She has a caregiver.
Well, I developed a site, caregiverdave.com. Caregivers can go there and get the support they need. It's a membership site. You know, it's got tons and tons of resources just so they can learn from my mistakes so they don't have to make their own.
And best place we can find Kiowa on you, where can we go?
If you want to reach me, just, I don't know, send me a DM on Instagram, hit up my pages there, comment on my pictures, or you can hit me up on Twitter or Facebook. I'm all on there. So Kiowa J. Gordon on Instagram and Circa Kai Gordon on Twitter. You can always reach me there. I'm always down to interact with whoever needs to talk, if you're a fan or if you're a colleague.
So you are approachable and reachable.
Definitely. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Love that.
I think so.
Some people just kind of isolate themselves from their fans.
Till he gets...
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Till he gets his next big show,
I don't get it.
And we'll see him on the Academy Awards getting an award, or the Grammy, and not Grammys. Oh, maybe the Grammys. I'm just or the Emmys or something. You never know when it's going to happen. And you know, he had one huge big break, but if he continues in this industry at 30, it could be many more. So he just never knows when that next script comes.
A very successful career. You're very fortunate.
Yes,
I'm blessed. That's all I can say.
Yes, you are.
All right. Well,
keep going to church. Remember, God does it all.
Right.
All right, man. Well, thanks for calling. Take care. Good talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
Great show. Nice. Thank you.
All right. Take care. It was fun.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. That was the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment, everyone. Take care. Hi, everyone, and welcome. And I'm excited always on the Neil Haley Network to create and develop another show. And I tell you, I love history. And my guest, who's going to have the show again, you guys have been listening on syndication to the Tobacco Wars radio show, and you've been blown away specifically about the stories that Jim has to tell. Well, we're going to learn more about Jim, and we're going to break down on this network more and more about the tobacco wars, more and more about trusts, Donald Trump, specifically what's happening in our country today, and how entrepreneurship needs to keep growing. So I'm excited to welcome to the program author and entrepreneur Jim Rumford. Jim, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm very good, Neil. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic,
Jim. Pleasure to be on your show.
Oh, it's your show, so it's a pleasure for you to be on my network, but it's your show, and we're going to learn about you. Again, the Tobacco Wars radio show. Well, you guys will be able to subscribe to it at one point in time and all that stuff, but let's kind of talk about specifically growing up. Tell us your background growing up as a child.
Well, I grew up in Northern Kentucky. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. The family is from Brooksville, Kentucky, which is in Bracken County. And that's along the Ohio River, about 50 miles upriver from Cincinnati. And the families had tobacco farms. So as a little kid, you know, 4 or 5 years old, as my grandfather Rumford would work the tobacco patch, I would follow along just walking through the fields, watching him do his work. And so as time went on, I grew up in the elementary schools in Northern Kentucky and then in Cincinnati. And then my parents moved to Dayton, Ohio, and I finished up high school up in Dayton, Ohio. So my basic background is raising tobacco. I started working the tobacco patch probably about 8 years old. And back in those days, if you were tall enough, if your feet would reach the pedals of a truck or a car or a tractor, you could drive. And we did. And so all the kids in Bracken County would work the tobacco patch. And we had a lot of fun doing it. There'd be contests on how quick you could cut a stalk of tobacco and how fast you could go down a row of tobacco and cut it and put it on a stick and then transfer it to the barn for curing. So in those days was a lot of fun. I got my first tobacco crop when I was like 10 or 11 years old.
Holy cow, wow.
It was one-tenth of an acre. It was one-tenth of an acre of tobacco. And tobacco was very profitable in those years. Had a tenth of an acre of tobacco. I was a sharecropper, which meant I would split the profit with the landowner. And so we went to market, and the product sold for $300. So me and the landowner would split it. So he's got $150. But $150 for a 10-year-old kid, this is in the early 50s.
Wow. Yeah.
You're rich.
Entrepreneur.
That's a lot of money.
You're born an entrepreneur, it sounds like. I mean, I guess.
Yes.
And in so many ways. I mean, 10 or 11, while I was doing a newspaper route at 10 or 11, you were making big deals as a farmer and learning this process at a very young age. Let's talk about work ethic. Being a tobacco farmer, learning it from your family, how much does that instill in you hard work?
It instills everything. And the saying goes, my grandfather Rumford would say, if you've never raised a crop of tobacco, you've never worked a day in your life. Something equally as hard is the way they used to raise cotton. Cotton was also equally as hard. But tobacco was a nice crop and made people a lot of money. In a little town of Brooksville, Kentucky, or in that county, Bracken County, we had a Ford dealership, a Ferguson dealership, a Chevrolet dealer, a Pontiac dealer, a Ford dealer, and a Chrysler dealer. And the population is only 5,000 people. And the city was the county seat. There was only 600 people in the county seat. But all those dealers were supported by tobacco. So because it has a long, long history. You know, tobacco was raised in this country back in the 1600s. The Indians helped cultivate that route. But not only did I have the background of raising tobacco, but when we lived in the city, I would be a sales guy, like selling as a kid, 11, 12 years old. We'd sell Bibles door to door, magazines door to door. I was an usher in a movie house, Lowe's.
Oh, wow.
I was assistant manager in a movie house. I washed dishes at Frisch's. So we did all these things, and then I got a job as a bread man, delivering bread door to door at homes. I was a milkman, and I sold water softeners. I did all that before I was 20 years old. Then I went to work for an international welding company called Eutectic. With them for 16 years, and then found the company I'm with now, which is Belzona. We've been with them for 40 years. So it's always been entrepreneur, capitalist type environments, sales, work. The work ethic has to be pretty good. And we've lost that because a lot of those jobs that I had as a kid growing up, they're all gone. Sad day in America. Sad day in America when the kids can't go out there and get jobs, like a paper route. I was also a paper boy. These jobs are vital for young people to learn the work ethic. And now today, as I interview salespeople or interview workers for our application company, we have a hard time finding that work ethic. Now, I was lucky lately. I just hired a guy last week. He's 23 years old. He commented about his generation not having a work ethic, and he assured us that his work ethic was right there where it should be. And as it turned out, so far this week, we found out that he's right on the money. So the work ethic is very, very necessary to grow this country forward. We can't give away free stuff. We can't give away free school, free food, free housing, free this, free that. We have to have capitalism, entrepreneurship anchored in this country, and it really is anchored in this country. So it's vital to our survival as a nation.
You know, Jim,
sound good?
You sound awesome. I mean, it's a great, great message. And I want to just take us back to the farming just to talk about a day of, as a tobacco farmer. What time would you get up and what time would you be finished? Because again, it's hard to look at, you know, you talk about these jobs that you and I had, from sales to, cold calling people, to getting the door slammed in our face, to working a long, hard day. And young people don't do that anymore. If they do get a job, they get a fast food job and they laze around on that fast food job, or they work at Starbucks and just talk all the time and really slow down the process instead of really knowing hard work. Explain that, when you, that hard work. What time in the morning would you get up and what time would your day end?
Let's talk about myself and also my dad and my uncles and aunts. Typically, when they were kids growing up, they would be up around 4:30. And in those days, we had milk cows, probably 20, 30 head of milk cows. Now, if you're milking cows, you have to do it twice a day, whether you want to or not. You don't have a choice. So the first thing you would do, get up, milk the cows. The next thing you would do is you would then clean up the milk parlor, clean everything up, and get the milk into milk cans for pickup by the milkman that would take it to the dairies for processing. The next thing they would do after that is they would go have breakfast. And then after breakfast, it'd be around 7, between 7 and 8 o'clock. Then you go to the field and you start working the tobacco patch, or you would be planting corn, or you'd be planting wheat. You'd be having your cattle grazed in the fields. So there's many, many chores to do every day. You have to feed the cattle. You have to feed the horses. Because in the 40s, this is going back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, it was all handwork. My grandfather's farm had modern, up-to-date equipment, 1925 style. Well, he used that equipment up until he passed away in 1958. So all that old technology that was used to raise tobacco was what I was raised with. Now, advanced today, the whole world's changed. It's all different now. But it was hard work. And so I was at a lady friend's house of mine down in Kentucky, in Ashland, Kentucky. And her father said to me, he says, Jim, where are you from? I said, well, I live up in Dayton, Ohio, but I'm from Bracken County. And he said, oh, you're one of those rich Bracken County farmers, aren't you? You never raised tobacco by hand, did you? I said, what are you talking about? And then he was silent on me, wouldn't talk anymore about it. So then a few, 10, maybe 15 years later, I'm at a wastewater treatment plant in Fairborn, Ohio. And the guy asked me where I was from. I said, well, I was raised in Bracken County. He said, oh, you're the rich Bracken County tobacco farmer, huh? You never had to raise tobacco by hand. Now, there's two ways of raising tobacco. One is with horses, tobacco setters, wagons, tractors and horses, what have you. The other way is when you're poor, as they are in eastern Kentucky, and didn't have much revenue from tobacco, but they had to raise it to get cash. So here's what we did. You would plow your tobacco bed to plant your tobacco seed. Yeah. Then you would have to rake it out and plant it and cover it with a cotton cover. We had to, by hand, dig up. We'd have to plow it by hand with shovels. And then we would have to rake it like you did. Then we would you'd have to sterilize the tobacco bed, which meant if we had a tractor or a horse, we'd burn logs of wood, big logs of wood, drag it along the tobacco bed to sterilize the ground. They had to pull their burning logs by hand. So they put a couple of chains around the logs, and then they would pull it by hand. Then they would then pull the plants and set the tobacco. And what we would do, we'd have a tobacco setter, and we would drop plants in the ground, and it would water it automatically, and that went pretty well for us. What they would have to do is stick a spade in the ground, open up, put the plant in, and then he said his brother would go to the creek, get two 5-gallon pails of water, and he would then pour the water into every plant that was put in the ground. And then they would house it. They would, by hand, they had a wagon. They'd shoot that up on an incline. They'd load the tobacco on the trailer, pull it into the barn and hang it, and then strip it and do everything else. So that's what you call working tobacco by hand, which is brutally hard work.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future. The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
I can't imagine this. I mean, when you talk about the work involved in just being a farmer, but when you talk about any type of farming or any type of manual labor that is from sunup to sundown, that you're putting all those muscles into it, you have to have attention to detail, especially with tobacco. Because again, if you mess it up, if that crop is lost or you make a mistake, that's a lot of lost profits, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But after doing it for a while, you don't make mistakes, and it goes along pretty good. But then you got to contend with the weather. Sometimes a big hailstorm could come along and wipe out the entire crop. But now, if you go back 125 years ago to the tobacco wars, from 1902 to 1908, you had 650,000 people involved. You had 10,000 night riders riding through the night, pulling farmers out of their house, horsewhipping them if they were selling their tobacco to the trust, the American Tobacco Trust, which was a monopoly. And so what they thought they could do is reduce the supply of tobacco and raise the price. Didn't work. But who got involved then was Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt came through, and he was known as the Trust Buster. And he broke up, the first companies he broke up was Standard Oil, John D. Rockefeller, because it was a monopoly. And so in the morning of, I think it was December 11th of 1911, the Supreme Court busted up Rockefeller, gave him 6 months to sell the companies off. That afternoon, James Buck Duke came into the court, and they said, bust up your company in 6 months. And so he formed about six companies, as did Rockefeller. And when they broke those monopolies up, and that's what created different oil companies and different tobacco companies, then everyone blossomed. Everyone made money. Even Rockefeller and Duke made more money by having those companies broken up because they owned stock in those companies than they would have ever done by themselves. Which brings us up to today, where we have all the monopolies out there now. Apple, Facebook, Google, there's many of them. Back 125 years ago, you buy out your competition and you made your company larger through vertical integration. So they had four, five, six, seven companies. Today, these companies had 25, 50, 100, 200 different companies to get their vertical integration together where they have a monopoly. Monopolies were outlawed in 1890 by the Sherman Antitrust Act. And it's still in effect today. So these monopolies that work today have been outlawed for all these years. And they've been doing this for 30, 40 years now. Mm-hmm. And so the FBI, the CIA, the FBI and the Justice Department is investigating the monopolies as of today. And I'm sure they're going to have some harsh returns on them. A lot of people are calling that the monopolies be broken up. But the news media really doesn't carry on with that. They don't talk a lot about it. But it's in the workings. I think, like Teddy Roosevelt, Donald Trump is going to be a monopoly buster or a trust buster. All right, a lot of history. Now, then my book.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Jim, yeah, we could definitely mention the book right now, but we'll go back to the story in our first interview. We're going to talk about a series of interviews, but the book, everyone needs to pick it up. I just finished it up. I enjoyed it. It's such historical, but it also tells a story of where we're going. History cannot repeat itself in so many ways, and if we go back down that road of monopolies again, our country's going to lose a lot of its steam if those monopolies keep growing and, you know, certain people keep taking over specific things and there's no choices to purchase items. There's only a few. There's no more mom and pops. There's no more smaller entrepreneurship, just the big companies. They're controlling everything.
And you cannot have that in our economy. You can't have that. The monopolies go against capitalism and entrepreneurship. Terrible. And that's what's happened. And so all these monopolies that's being built through vertical integration has created this environment, which is very detrimental to the well-being of the country.
Absolutely. So, Jim, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to take you back again. You talked about tobacco. We're talking more about Jim Rumford, again, entrepreneur, but everyone needs to pick up his book. It's available on Amazon and all those places, or at thetobaccowars.com, or just Google search Tobacco Wars, and you will find a place that has the book to purchase. And if you go to the website, you can get an autographed copy. But again, we're with Jim Rumford here on the Tobacco Wars radio show. And the thing, Jim, when you talk about hard work, you talked about, you know, working the tobacco fields, also having an entrepreneurial piece in tobacco. When you went into other industries before you started your business, because the next episode is going to be more about entrepreneurship, where you took on your business and where it is today, and kind of a discussion and airy basis and relating to tobacco in so many ways, meaning the work ethic. When you went to take on other jobs, what separated you from your peers at work?
Hard work. Everything can be achieved through hard work. When we started this company back 40 years ago, we worked 7 days a week and probably 12, 14, 18 hours a day and to get it going. So we worked really hard because we entered into an industry that was really not very well respected or thought highly of. And so we had to sell that program that it was the way to go. Structural adhesives are the way to go. But back then, it was the welding, steel replacement, parts replacements, and that type of thing that drove everything. So I left the welding business and started Belzona, which is a manufacturer of structural adhesives. Then what comes along is, let's say, back with the Wright brothers building the airplane, they made it out of wood and canvas. Then the new manufacturers of airplanes decided to go to aluminum, and there was a big fight about that. Oh, it won't work. We need to stay with wood and fabric. Well, they got their way with aluminum. Then comes the new planes of today are carbon fiber. And so we've moved from wood to metal to carbon fiber. Carbon fibers is what's going to drive the country and plastics. So that's how things like this evolve. But it takes a lot of hard work to make a historic industrial change, or any change for that matter.
Because we got to make an industrial change so that American goods are marketable in the marketplace worldwide, but ultimately aren't going overseas. That's another issue that we're dealing with in our country, right? As much that's shipped overseas because of the taxes that the businesses deal with in the United States.
Well, what happened back, let's say, under you had H.W. Bush, then you had Clinton come in. So you had Clinton, then George W. Bush, and George W. Bush, and then Obama. With those four terms of presidents, we shipped out of the country 60,000 manufacturing plants that went overseas, mainly into Southeast Asia. Now Trump came in to bring jobs back to America. So far, he's brought back 12,000 manufacturing plants. So we got 48,000 plants that's not there yet. It really threw a wet blanket on the middle-class people, on the working population. And so Mr. Trump is bringing back jobs to America by bringing manufacturing plants back to America. But if you look at what's going on now with the virus that's kind of shut China down.
Yeah.
Now you have all these companies over there that with supply links into America can't get parts and can't get things going. They're going to be some layoffs. They're going to be some production shutdown. It's hard to say how bad this is going to get. But why would they smart good executives make a decision to offshore their vital parts, vital components that they need to make parts here in America? And that's what they've done. And now they need to bring them back.
So we don't know historically where we're going to go.
Meantime,
we don't know where it's going to end up happening. So many interesting insights, Jim, and that's what you have to do is pay attention to what's happening in the economy. If you're an entrepreneur and you're not watching the markets and you're not watching specifically trends, you're not going to, as an entrepreneur, Jim, you're not going to be able to make the changes that are necessary for your business when those trends happen, right?
Mm-hmm. See, if you have entrepreneurs, which this country really was based on entrepreneurship, capitalism, always has been. You know, Captain John Smith in Jamestown said, oh, we're going to have a communal property. Everyone's going to work, put the supplies in the stockhouse, and we'll distribute them out. Then they found out that half the population wouldn't work. So they scrapped that ideal and gave each person a plot of land. You're on your own. And that's what changed that. So when you give half your stuff away, half the people will work for it and half the other half won't. Then comes a time when the half that's working for it, they don't want to work for it because they're giving it away. So that changes. Like, you know, in school, ask any kid in school if he's got, say, a college degree or two or three college degrees. Say, well, listen, I'd like to have one of your degrees. He says, no, I worked for that. You can't have that. Well, it's the same thing with income. The left wants to take our money. They didn't work for it, but they want it. We work for it. We want to keep it. So that divide is still there. It's always going to be there.
All right. So best places
to go. The haves and the have-nots.
Absolutely, Jim. The best place to go for information on your book is thetobaccowars.com. And for you and in the company, where's that? What's the website for that? to find information on your company?
Oh, our company is RumfordGroup.com.
Okay.
And that's our webpage.
All right. Well, fantastic. Jim, great first episode of the Tobaccos Radio Show. We're going to go into more and more your decision-making process after tobacco farming and then some of the other jobs you had before starting your company and talk and kind of...
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts, CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.